The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. Welcome to the Therapy Suite. I'm Duncan Ellison, a therapeutic counsellor with a focus on positive mental health. This week in the headlines, many employees in the UK believe that mental health issues could ruin their career. The University of Nottingham is leading the way with student mental health services. And 40% of us are now fearful of answering the telephone. These stories and more in a few moments. There's lots to discuss this week, including how to cope with anxiety. We'll also be taking a look at good foods to put you in good moods. And in this week's Toolbox Talk, it's all about cognitive behavioural therapy. Music on the way from Toto and Elton John, and wise words this week from one of the most eminent scientific minds of the 20th century. If good mental health matters to you, then this show is not to be missed. So join me, Duncan Ellison, as we open the doors to the Therapy Suite, only on UK Health Radio. In the news this week. This week it has been revealed that men are hiding their body image as numbers of men seeking therapy has increased due to male eating disorders. It is now estimated that as many men as women now suffer from bulimia. Figures show a rise of 70% in hospital admissions for men with eating disorders between 2010 and 2016. It is believed this rise can be attributed to male celebrities coming forward and discussing their body image. Such is the pressure on men that even young boys are now anorexic. On the other end of the scale, while some feel they have to slim down, many are trying to bulk up, a condition that is called muscle dysmorphia, whereby individuals are obsessed with muscle development. Also in the news this week, UK workers feel that revealing a mental health issue would jeopardise their career. In a recent survey of 2,000 workers, 38% feared talking openly about mental health could affect their chance of promotion or job security. A further 17% admitted they would face negative judgment from a colleague. In a poll of 1,000 managers, almost 25% said their organisation had no procedure for dealing with staff who have concerns about mental health. In response to this, the Mental Health Foundation has published a guide for employers on how to transform a workplace into mentally friendly environments. A spokesperson for the charity said employers need to ensure a positive culture to enable staff to thrive. In a recent poll by Counselling Directory, over 40% of people admitted they hate or avoid answering their phones. This comes following an announcement by Ofcom that two-thirds of people in the UK now own a smartphone. This has led to a phenomenon called telephone anxiety. Whilst more and more people invest in smartphone technology, we are using it less and less for making telephone calls, preferring to communicate by email or text. Telephone phobia is linked to social anxiety, which is a common disorder involving the fear of social performance where others might judge you. Research out this month suggests that we now have a complicated relationship with the phone. Rather than making us feel more connected, it is, in fact, working against us by heightening anxiety. Finally, as the new university year gains momentum, students accessing mental health services has never been more in demand. For many students, university is the first time they've been away from home and responsible for themselves. And whilst this can be an exciting prospect, many have trouble adjusting. In the last academic year alone, more than 2,000 students at Nottingham Trent University required mental health attention for depression and anxiety. This equates to 80 new students a week and 11 students per day. The University of Nottingham is leading the way with a full-time mental health team, which includes counsellors and mentors. Rosie Tressler, CEO of student mental health charity Student Minds, said in a recent report that one-third of the population will first experience mental health issues between the ages of 18 and 25. A spokesperson for the Nottingham Trent University said, "Here there is plenty of time and optimism for mental health. We're making sure that mental health becomes everyone's business, and we're embracing a much more holistic framework, and I think we've come a long way. That's the news this week. You're listening to me, Duncan Ellison, on The Therapy Suite, only on UK Health Radio. So looking back at the news this week, there's one particular story that resonates with me, and that is the story about workers who are concerned about expressing their feelings toward mental health. This is such a shame. Furthermore, what is really worrying is the number of businesses who don't have a mental health plan in place for their employees. How do you feel about chatting to your boss about mental health worries? I work with a very large employer, a blue chip company that is a household name. And what I'm really impressed with is how the organisation has empowered their staff to mentor others about mental health issues. Not only that, they access a very good counselling service as and when they need it. It's very refreshing to see. What a shame it must be to have the worry that you are not able to progress in your own chosen career if you speak out about personal mental health issues. Surely we've moved on in society where mental health is no longer a taboo. Well, sadly, no, the statistics say otherwise. Let's look at some stats. 38% of British employees feel they can't talk openly at work as they feel it will affect their job prospects and their chance of promotion. A further 17% said they feared negative judgments by colleagues. 45% said they would rather make up something such as stomachache as an excuse for absence rather than admitting a mental health issue. Now, these are worrying, shameful numbers. I'd like to refer back to Prince Harry. I spoke about this in the first programme a few weeks ago. His boss is the Queen, and you don't get much higher than that, do you? He, and indeed his brother, the Duke of Cambridge, have spoken out about turning negative thoughts into positive behaviour. If they can be open, why then do we still have such shocking statistics? 65% of managers felt taking time off due to a physical illness was more serious than taking time off for mental reasons. Now, I find that quite uncomfortable. Now, we're coming to the close of 2017, and it's been a great year for mental well-being. People are coming forward and banging a positive drum. So let's do our bit to normalise mental health in the workplace. It's hard enough working through a personal battle with mental issue. I've been there, and it felt embarrassing and degrading. And that's possibly because I never had the courage at the time to talk to my co-workers, and for the same reasons that have been highlighted in the news today. But times are changing. If you do know someone suffering with mental health, it may be a lack of confidence, or it could be anxiety or depression. Reach out, talk to them, make the first move, show them you know. Let's move on and look at male body image. Another story making the headlines this week. Admissions to hospital have increased by 70%, proving it's not just the women who worry about their shape and size. Many suggest that glossy magazines have a negative effect on young people. Here's the thing, though. It's not just young people. Take Noel Fielding. You may have seen him. He's the presenter of the Great British Bake Off. He revealed that he can't put weight on because he gets more work when he's thinner. Now, he's 44 years old. Last year, a survey of more than 1,000 boys aged between 8 and 18, out of them, 55% said they would consider changing their diet to look better. And 23% said they believed there was a perfect male body to strive for. Now, I do get men in their late teens worrying about body image, but 8-year-olds, really? That worries me. I have a son close to that age, and I don't want him to worry about what his physical figure looks like. It's way too early to have that kind of mental pressure, don't you think? The survey revealed four of the biggest sources of pressure on secondary school boys to look good were friends, social media, advertising, and celebrities. Over 56% of young men said they would feel uncomfortable talking to a teacher, and 29% said they would struggle talking to parents. That's astonishing. Nobody should feel pressured about their body image. If people are uncomfortable at 8, how are they going to be later on in life? As parents and grandparents, we need to be aware of this. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this subject. In fact, if there's anything that we talk about on this programme that you want to comment about, reach out to me. Email me at duncan@thinkduncan.com or reach out on Twitter at duncan_Ellison. So how's your relationship with your mobile phone? Let's turn our attention to overcoming telephone fear, something else that has been highlighted in this week's news. In a world where almost everyone has a mobile phone, is it a surprise to you that 40% of us get nervous when the phone rings? We've become a slave to the phone. But this is having some interesting effects. Whilst we want to be easily connected to people, the volume of calls is making us anxious. This is a problem that maybe we've created for ourselves. What do you think? Are you one of the 40% who are suffering from telephone anxiety? It is certainly easier to email or text someone. But I have a problem with that. When you read a text or an email, it is open to interpretation. Words without emotion are clinical. There is no sense of personality. And I, for one, worry when I read a text or an email that I may have upset someone, or maybe somebody is being sarcastic or aggressive. I often ask colleagues to read an email before I send it, as I worry what I've written may sound harsh or, again, sarcastic. And I do feel paranoia with emails, simply because, as I said, you get no sense of personality or mood or feeling. I don't know whether you do this, but I can be halfway through replying to an email and then think, do you know what, I'll just pick up the phone. Isn't that funny? I could have just saved myself half the time writing that email just by picking up the phone in the first place. Conversation is becoming a lost art. Telephone anxiety is a surprisingly common form of social anxiety. Psychology Today, a mental health online publication, suggests three ways to overcome this phobia. Number one, practice, practice, practice. Frequent practice will help you develop your telephone technique and persona. Two, cognitive therapy. Turn your negative thoughts into positive actions and face your fears. Finally, number three, relax. Before making an important call, chill yourself out and try some breathing exercises. So we touched on social anxiety. I thought we could look more at this on today's programme, in particular, how you can overcome it. But first, what is it? Well, social anxiety disorder is also called social phobia, and it can be a long-lasting and overwhelming fear of social situations. It is common for this to start during teenage years, and for some, it does get better in time, although for others, it can be a terrible struggle to overcome. According to the NHS, it is more than just shyness. It is an intense fear that can affect everyday life, self-confidence, and work. Many people occasionally worry about social situations, but someone with social anxiety feels overly worried before, during, and sometimes after social situations. You may have social anxiety if you worry about everyday activities, such as meeting strangers, starting conversations and speaking on the phone, maybe even shopping. You might worry about eating in front of others, blushing or sweating. You may even worry about what people are thinking about you. And you'll most certainly avoid eye contact. These points could contribute to the following symptoms. Feeling sick, sweating, trembling, palpitations and panic attacks. People with social anxiety disorder will, more than likely, have other mental issues such as depression. So what can be done to help? It's going to be a good idea to see a counsellor like myself. What I can't do, however, is make a diagnosis. That is a journey which starts with your GP. Whether talking to a counsellor or a GP, you will explore your feelings and behaviours. So think about the following things. Think about what goes through your mind when attempting to do something uncomfortable. See if you can get a clearer picture of the problems you would like to tackle. Try to replace unrealistic beliefs with more manageable ones. If you believe something went badly, consider if you're being rational or are you just making an assumption. Don't spend too much time worrying about how others see you. You may be surprised to hear that your anxiety may not be obvious to anyone other than you. And try doing something which pushes your boundaries. This is going to be tough, but the satisfaction gained is going to be worth it. I'd like a moment to reflect on how others see you. I'm 42, and I've spent a good proportion of that time worrying about what other people think about me. And perhaps I still do. I'm not thick-skinned. And when I had therapy, this was something I brought up a lot. And with my counsellor, I explored how much time and energy I was losing by worrying about what other people thought. Whether you can change a person's perception of you or not, the fact remains, whatever a person thinks of you is their thought. As hard as it sounds, it doesn't belong to you. You can't take ownership of it. Therefore, don't worry about it. If you want to find out more about social anxiety, there are plenty of good websites to look at. Three here that I've picked for you. Anxiety UK, www.anxietyuk.org.uk. Mind, www.mind.org.uk. And Anxiety Alliance, www.anxietyalliance.org.uk. I just want to say, please don't look at the information online and self-diagnose yourself. The information I give you is for your reference. If you are genuinely concerned about anything we discuss on the programme, please consult your GP or find a counselling service to talk to. Moving on then, do you have children or grandchildren who are at university or maybe considering going to university next year? If so, the story about student mental health will be something I'm sure you'll be interested in. We know that one in four people in employment are suffering from mental health. For those who are still in full-time education, that number rises to one in three. Many young people are tempted with the student lifestyle. But once the first term is underway and the excitement of Freshers' Week is over, the reality can be quite different. As I mentioned in the news story earlier, going to university is often the first time young people really face adult responsibilities, and that can come as a shock. You have to learn to cohabit with new people. You have to manage money, and of course you have to manage your own time, particularly with timetables and lectures. For me, I enjoyed the new social scene, and many of the people I met during the first week of university are people who I'm still friends with. Whilst weekdays were busy and I was able to focus my mind, it was weekends that I found difficult. Being away from my family was certainly a struggle. Whilst I thought I was quite mature enough to deal with being away from home, the reality was really quite different. Simple things like a Sunday roast dinner was something I missed terribly. Not so much the food, moreover the comfort and security that a close family meal provides. At 18, the difference in people's maturity can be vast. And clearly many can cope. But a third of students find the transition from family life to student life a monumental jump. It's important to remember that it isn't just the student at university who may be struggling with the change of routine. Parents and grandparents may also be suffering. And this may include loss and anxiety. Brunel University's head of counselling told the Daily Telegraph, parents need to prepare their children, but also need to prepare themselves. The reality of a long telephone conversation each day is unrealistic. You need to agree simple ground rules to keep in touch, maybe a text every few days, which should reassure you. Whether you are a student, a parent, or a grandparent, a good resource is the Student Minds website. Student Minds is the UK student medical health charity, and you can find more information at www.studentminds.org.uk. It's a really good site. If you click on the Find Resources section, you'll find information on eating disorders, mental well-being, finance, sexual orientation, and starting university life. What I thought was really good about this site is the guide for friends. How to talk to others who may be experiencing mental health difficulties. There's lots of really good information and resources to download. And the advice from Brunel University's counselling team is to find the welfare team at your university and don't be scared to use the service. If you remember, 2,000 students a year use such a service at Nottingham Trent University. It's difficult to imagine how many other students are not using the service and possibly suffering in silence. So the Student Minds website again, www.studentminds.org.uk. Coming up, music on the way from a group who named their band after the dog in The Wizard of Oz. Foods to help you maintain mental health. And in this week's Toolbox Talk, I'll be focusing on CBT. Right now, though, here are some tips on great foods for mental health.
In order for the brain to perform at optimal levels, it requires a mix of mind-powering carbohydrates, lean proteins, antioxidants, fatty acids, and vitamins. Whole wheat, oats, barley, rye, and millet. These grains release glucose sugars slowly to fuel the body and the brain. They're also rich in soluble fiber to help lower the risk of stroke. The entire egg, not just the egg white, is a rich source of omega-3 fatty acids to keep you energized. Salmon, herring, sardines, mackerel, and tuna also provide omega-3 fatty acids to support brain and nervous systems while lowering the risk of dyslexia and other attention deficit disorders. Blueberries are high in antioxidants like vitamin E, which protect the brain from free radical damage and age-related cognitive loss. A single square of dark chocolate is rich in antioxidants to promote blood flow to the brain, leading to better concentration and memory. Nuts and seeds offer increases of dopamine, serotonin, and folic acid, which strengthen concentration and prevent Alzheimer's disease. Dark-skinned veggies, like beets, contain disease-fighting antioxidants to keep the brain healthy and strong as well. If you need to be more alert, brew green tea to help reduce plaque deposits on the brain, which can also cause Alzheimer's disease.
Thank you.
Toto plays on UK Health Radio with a song that reached number 3 on the UK Singles Chart and number 1 on the US Billboard Top 100. And more music on the way from an iconic artist who well and truly took us into space. This is UK Health Radio. Hello, this is Duncan with the Therapy Suite. And on this part of the programme, I'd like to look at good foods which will promote positive mental health. In a moment, we'll be hearing from Mind, who will be bringing you good foods for good moods. Also today, do you buy diet, low-calorie and sugar-free products? If so, stay tuned as I'll be turning my attention to a product that fooled us all, a product that can have a devastating effect on our mental health. On this part of the programme, I'd like to look at nutrition. This is not necessarily about counting the calories, moreover ensuring your mind is getting the right stuff it needs. Now, I'm a counsellor at Mind, so I thought that would be a great place to signpost you to for healthy eating information and tips on good mental health. So where do we start? How about breakfast? When your blood sugars drop, you are going to feel tired, irritable and generally low. So choose foods that will steadily release energy and never skip breakfast. Good food sources are protein foods, nuts, seeds, oats and whole grains. Avoid foods which will make your blood sugar rise and fall, such as sugary cereals and sweetened drinks. Throughout the day, you must get your important five, and that is a minimum of 5 fruit and veggies a day. These will provide the nutrients, vitamins and fibre your body requires to keep you physically and mentally fit. Try eating as much raw fruit and veg as you can. Don't forget, cooking can take away that goodness we just spoke about. Tomatoes, mushrooms and bananas all contain high levels of potassium, which is essential for your whole nervous system. Mental wellness is not just about food. You have to keep yourself hydrated. And if you don't get enough fluids, you may well find it difficult to concentrate. 2 pints a day is a minimum requirement, and good drinks include water, herbal or green tea, or diluted fruit juice. Good fats will keep your brain functioning. Look out for oily fish, poultry, olives, and yogurt. Finally, don't forget the proteins. If you do eat meat, choose the best quality you can.
Food and mood. 8 ways to get you thinking about how your food affects your mood. 1. Eat regularly. If your blood sugar drops, it can make you feel tired, irritable, or depressed. Eating regularly will keep your sugar levels steady. Try food that releases energy slowly, like food high in protein, such as nuts and seeds, oats and whole grains. 2. Make sure you're getting the right fats. Your brain needs fatty oils, such as omega 3 and 6, to keep it working well. So rather than avoiding all fat, it's important to eat the right ones. Try eating food high in the good fats, like oily fish, chicken, nuts like walnuts and almonds, olive and sunflower oils, sunflower or pumpkin seeds, avocados, or milk, yogurt, cheese and eggs. 3. Increase your protein. Protein has amino acids in it. These make up the chemicals your brain needs to regulate your thoughts and feelings. It also helps control your blood sugar levels. So try eating protein-rich foods. Lean meat, fish, eggs, cheese, legumes like peas, beans and lentils, nuts and seeds. 4. Drink more. If you're not hydrated enough, you might find it difficult to concentrate or think clearly. You might also start to feel constipated, which puts no one in a good mood. Water is great, but why not try drinking herbal or green tea or diluted fruit juice? Remember, drinks like tea and coffee don't count because the caffeine in them makes you need the toilet. Alcohol and sugary drinks like fruit squash or cola don't count either. 5. Eat a rainbow of fruit and vegetables. Vegetables and fruit contain a lot of the minerals, vitamins and fibre we need to keep us physically and mentally healthy. Eating a variety of different colours every day means you'll get a good range of nutrients. 6. Cut down on the caffeine. Having too much caffeine can make you feel anxious and depressed, disturb your sleep, especially if you're having it last thing at night, or give you withdrawal symptoms when you stop suddenly. Caffeine is in things like coffee, tea, chocolate, cola, and energy drinks. You might feel better if you stop drinking caffeine completely, but just cutting down will help too. 7. Pay attention to your gut. Your gut and your brain use similar chemicals. So, keeping your gut healthy can help to keep your brain healthy too. Healthy gut foods include fibre-rich foods like fruits, vegetables and whole grains, and live yogurts which contain probiotics. Remember that it might take time for your gut to get used to a new eating pattern, so make changes slowly. 8. Are you intolerant? Sometimes people have food intolerances which can affect both your mental and physical health. If you're worried you might be intolerant, you could contact a professional dietitian or nutritionist. Remember that any changes you make might take time for your body and your mind to get used to. So, if you're changing to a new eating pattern, it might take a while for you to start feeling the benefits.
Good foodie tips there, don't you think? Now, there's a big consideration we need to talk about, and that's caffeine. You're best off avoiding this. I'm going to share something with you. In the summer, I seriously overdid the coffee. I was doing 5 large mugs of freshly ground coffee in 2 hours. I wasn't listening to my body. The more poorly I felt, the more coffee I needed. You can imagine what happened. I had a really big, nasty come down. And since August, I've drunk nothing other than water with lemon. It really has made a difference. In a moment, I'm going to talk about something else that is bad for you. Something that has been proven to negatively affect your cognitive function. Something which is hidden in products I guarantee you'll have in the fridge. Before we do, I'd just like to wrap up the good foods topic with a word of caution. If you are taking medication, please don't diet without consulting your doctor. You can learn more about healthy eating, by the way, at www.nhs.uk/change4life. And that's change, numeric 4, life. And if you want more information here on UK Health Radio regarding food, here's my top tip. Log on to ukhealthradio.com, click in presenters, find Catherine Tate. She's the food teacher. And I tell you something, you absolutely need her in your life. Aspartame is not a word used in everyday conversation, yet it's more familiar to you than you would think. Look on the ingredient information on many diet and sugar-free products, and there it is. As diet products increased in popularity and availability in the 70s and 80s, overweight adults and children were encouraged to ditch the sugar. Print and television advertising skewed our brains and led us to believe we could enjoy all the flavour without the calories. Largely used as a sugar substitute in food and particularly beverages, many will remember the brand name it was first sold under, NutriSweet. It even had an assuring logo on the front of products as a sort of affirmation of quality. Whilst this product may have sounded the perfect solution for everyone with a sweet tooth, the reality was somewhat different. This year, having been rigorously tested, the evidence does not support the benefit for weight loss. So how does this fit with counselling and mental health? Well, I'm not a dietitian, nutritionist, or doctor, so I cannot make a suggestion that aspartame is not safe to consume. Indeed, in the UK, there are strict regulations overseen by the European Food Safety Authority regarding its use and how information is displayed on food and beverage products. So hopefully you'll be able to make your own judgment. But as a counsellor, I do see the mental torment of dieting. This may be evident through depression, so not being able to reach a dietary goal or body image, anxiety, how I look to other people, and self-harm, a frustration response, all of which can reoccur throughout life. Looking deeper into the side effects of aspartame, it reveals some worrying trends, with a suggestion that the product causes seizures, headaches, and mood swings. There's also anecdotal evidence that it could contribute to depression, irritability, aggression, anxiety, personality changes, insomnia and phobias, circumstances which clients bring to counselling on a regular basis. It's also an influence in more serious conditions such as MS, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, epilepsy and dementia. It is fair to categorise aspartame as a stimulant. And to be unbiased, excessive use of sugar, and as we heard a few moments ago, caffeine, may have similar effects on the body. So they're also worth avoiding. Having recently discussed this topic with a nutritionist and looked for ourselves at the arguments for and against aspartame, there was enough information for me to be concerned, so much so that the weekly shop has now changed to reflect products not containing the sugar substitute. This includes fruit squashes and yogurts. As a sufferer of chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, and having had a recent crash managing the condition, I have removed any food and beverage containing aspartame, and the change in such a short space of time has improved my physical and cognitive well-being. And that's enough proof for me. If you are suffering from a chronic illness, or any of the side effects outlined in this week's programme, or you may be a carer struggling to make sense of the circumstances you've found yourself in, counselling may help you make sense of the situation you are dealing with. Make the call and find a therapist you feel comfortable with. If you are inquisitive about aspartame, there is plenty of information online, although my suggestion is try cutting out products with artificial sweeteners completely and see how you feel. Still to come on the Therapy Suite, wise words. This week an extract from one of the most amazing minds ever. And we'll be looking at CBT. Right now, though, have a listen to the three most important facets of cognitive behavioural therapy from the man who is credited as being its foremost pioneer, Dr. Aaron T. Beck.
And this is the formulation I follow. First of all, I have to try to discern what is the belief that's behind this particular problem, what is the behavior that's behind this problem, and what is the kind of focusing that the person is doing. Once you have this triad of what I've said, the belief, the behavior, and the focusing, it can give you a thumbnail sketch so you can address it to any particular problem.
She packed my bags last night, pre-flight. 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. I miss the earth so much, I miss my wife. It's lonely out in space on such a timeless flight. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time till touchdown brings me round again to find I'm not the man they think I am at home. No one there to raise them. If you did, and all the science I don't understand is just my.
my job 5 days a week. A rocket man, a rocket man. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time till touchdown brings me round again to find.
This is UK Health Radio. My name's Duncan and I'll be with you each week to discuss everything positive about mental health. If you haven't already done so, have a look at this month's edition of the Triangle magazine, UK Health Radio's very own publication. It's stacked full of great information and healthy tips, and it's well worth a read. You'll find a link on the front page of the website at www.ukhealthradio.com. Let's move on to the Toolbox Talk. Earlier in the programme, we were discussing telephone anxiety, and I mentioned CBT as a route to working with this problem. We briefly touched on CBT in the first two programmes, and today it fits well to look at this in more depth. CBT itself has roots as far back as early Greek philosophy, with the belief that logic could identify and overcome the false beliefs that contribute to destructive behaviour. Whilst modern CBT can be traced back to the development of behavioural therapy in the early 20th century, it was in the 1960s when the modern practice was developed with the combination of several forms of conditioning and behavioural therapy. If you have been referred for counselling by your GP here in the UK, the likelihood is you will have received CBT. It is the therapy of choice by the NHS. Whilst there is very strong evidence of positive change with clients who have received CBT, some therapists argue it is a quick fix. It is true that CBT may not change a deep-rooted issue, such as bereavement or sexual abuse. But for issues requiring a change in behavioural patterns, there is no doubt that CBT is the correct choice of therapy. As I've mentioned, we know that CBT is the preferred therapy for the NHS. So today, I've picked out some key information from the NHS Choices website. CBT is based on the concept of the connection between thoughts, feelings, and physical sensations, with the belief that negative thoughts and feelings can trap you in a vicious cycle. It aims to deal with overwhelming problems in a more positive way, and focuses on practical ways to improve your mindset. In addition to anxiety and depression, CBT can also help with the following disorders: OCD, panic attacks, post-traumatic stress, phobias, and eating disorders. Within a therapeutic environment and working with your counsellor, you will begin to break your problem down to their separate parts, such as thoughts, feelings, and actions, with the aim of turning unhelpful negative thoughts and behaviours into positive actions. So how does it work? Your problems will be broken into five main areas of focus: situations, thoughts, emotions, physical feelings, and actions. We know that these are interconnected and can affect each other. For example, your thoughts will affect how you behave. After you have identified the problem, you will then be in a position to make positive changes in your life, including questioning negative thoughts and replacing them with more positive ones. After you have identified the problem, you will then be in a position to make positive changes in your life, including questioning negative thoughts and replacing them with more positive ones. You'll be able to recognise and avoid situations which may not be beneficial to you. If you want to find out more about cognitive behavioural therapy and the NHS's approach to CBT, log on to www.nhs.uk. Wise words on the way in a moment after this CBT explanation.
Making sense of CBT, a guide to what CBT is and how you can decide whether it's best for you. If you're living with a mental health problem, it can be hard to know which way to turn or what to do to feel better. You might go to your GP, and one of the first things they might offer is CBT, which stands for Cognitive Behavioural Therapy. It combines cognitive therapy, examining the things you think, and behavioural therapy, examining the things you do. The word therapy might make you think of laying on a couch talking to a man with spectacles and a beard about your childhood while he analyses your dreams, but CBT is actually a very practical type of talking therapy, which focuses on goals and focuses mostly on the present day and things that are affecting you in your life now. The theory behind CBT is that the way we think about situations can affect the way we feel and behave. It does this by dealing with how your thoughts affect your feelings and behaviours, and teaches you coping skills for dealing with different problems. For example, you might make a simple mistake, like, say, burning the dinner. This might make you think bad things, and it might make you feel worthless and inadequate, which could lead you to do things like withdrawing, snapping at your family, or trying to avoid things which you think might go wrong. Or perhaps you've been invited out for drinks with some friends, and you start thinking negative things. This might make you feel anxious and scared, which might make you do something like saying no to the invite, avoiding your friends completely, or using drink and drugs to cope with the situation. Over time, whether it's years, weeks, or months, this cycle of thoughts, feelings, and behaviours may have happened so many times it's become like a habit. You start avoiding situations more and more, or automatically blame yourself if something goes wrong. And the more you do these things, the worse it can get. A CBT therapist will help you break this cycle and figure out what sorts of negative feelings, thoughts, and behaviours might be contributing to the problems you're experiencing. They will help you deal with your negative thinking and help you change your behaviour, both of which will lead to an improvement in your mood. CBT can be helpful for people with nearly every diagnosis you can think of, and can be delivered through one-on-one sessions, in groups, self-help books, online, or through a CD-ROM. That doesn't mean that CBT works for everyone, though. Some people struggle with it because they find it just too hard to talk about their feelings. CBT is usually quite a short-term treatment, and so you may find that your problems are too complex to deal with in the time. It can also be quite hard work. Your therapist will probably set you homework, and you have to really practice the skills they teach you to see a difference in how you're feeling. If you don't think CBT is the right treatment for you, you should be able to talk to your GP about what alternatives there are. The Mind website also has lots of information about the different treatments that are available for a wide range of mental health problems. And Mind's info line can also talk to you about what you might find helpful.
That's just about it for another week. I hope you've enjoyed the programme as much as I have. Next week I'll bring you more mental health news, topical chat and wise words. Wrapping up, this week's wise words comes from a great thinker, Albert Einstein. See what you think to this. I am enough of an artist to draw freely upon my imagination. Imagination is more important than knowledge. Knowledge is limited whilst imagination encircles the world. Don't forget, if you do have any mental health concerns or have been affected by anything raised on today's programme, please consult your GP or find a counselling service to talk to. You've been listening to The Therapy Suite with me, Duncan Ellison, only on UK Health Radio. Stay well and keep smiling.